This is the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast, and I'm sad to say, after 60 episodes, the last show. Chris and I started this podcast 3 years ago with the sole aim of helping clubs at all levels of game with their marketing. If recent events have taught us anything, the power of football is strong in this country, and there are clubs doing some amazing stuff out there. If you stay on this podcast after an insightful interview with George Fraser, Chris and I will discuss what is next and chat about our favourite shows. In the meantime, and for one last time, on this show, Lowland League Chairman George Fraser talked to us about the development of the Lowland League. Enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Scottish FA's Scottish Football Marketing Podcast. I'm Chris Sampson from Sports Marketing Scotland and I'm with the Scottish FA's Michael Boko. How are you today, mate?
I'm good, Chris. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, not too bad. We're with George Fraser today and he is the General Manager of Scottish Lowland League side BSC Glasgow, as well as being the Chairman of the Lowland League itself. George, welcome to the podcast.
Good morning, chaps. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Not a problem at all. Looking forward to chatting. We're just going to get straight into it then, I think. George, introduce us to yourself. Tell us a bit about your career today and then how you got involved with BSC initially.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. I got involved with BSC back in 2005 when we still are a community sports club. It was actually we were in the local area and my son was looking for a football team to play for. And I would take him along to training, every night, etc. And it was quite clear that there was need of volunteers, you know. So as you do, you sort of get roped into the volunteering side of things. And before you know it, you're engulfed in it, you know. So it just grew from there. I became club secretary of the sports club. And then, you know, get involved in various activities with them. And then in 2014, we obviously got the chance to put a senior team into the Scottish Lowland League. And fortunately, we were accepted and, I took over the running of the team, so to speak, at that point, from an administrative point of view. It's just grown from there, so to speak.
What was your career like? I presume you're still working as well, but what was your working career like before you got involved with the club and to date?
Yeah, listen, I've always been involved. I mean, I was involved in sales, believe it or not, you know, for a long time. Well, really since I've left school, mainly in the construction industry. Various jobs within construction, and that was really me up until I got involved with the sports club, and then I sort of came away from the sales side of things, you know, and got involved in more in sports administration, etc., and helping out at the sports club, and that's really what I've been doing since then, Chris.
Nice one. And then fast forward in a little bit, how did you then become chairman of the Lowland League itself?
Yeah, I mean, I was asked onto the board. I'd actually, you know, put myself up for nomination for the boards. I think it was 2017, from memory. I was unfortunate at that point not to get on, so that was fine, no problem. But then a board member left not long after that, from memory, and I was asked to come join the Lowland League board. Which I was happy to do, and from there, you know, I got myself into, you know, things to do with the league, etc., and helping out there as a board member. And at the following year's election, I put myself forward for chairman, and again, I was fortunate enough to be elected as chairman.
George, obviously, with the Lowland League, What would you say is the USP of the Lowland League? How would you sell it to those that are unfamiliar with it?
Yeah, I think we've always been clear that, you know, our biggest selling point is the affordability. We are the affordable league in Scottish football, in my opinion. I think our highest admission rate is, I think it's £10. You know, so it ranges from £5 to £10 for admission for an adult. You know, I mean, when you compare that to other leagues in Scottish football, etc., you know, in the SPFL particularly, who we, you know, align ourselves to, you know, we are well beneath, you know, probably the average entry fee there. So we're definitely, you know, an attractive proposition for anyone who wants to try out sort of lower league football, you know, at an affordable price.
And obviously we had Michael Park on the podcast, going back one of the first ones, I think, Chris, wasn't it? So, I mean, he was a volunteer at the time, and I know he still does at BSC. You know, what sort of volunteer team does the league have in the background to assist on sort of the marketing and sort of content side of things?
Yeah, I'll be honest with you, Michael, it's quite sparse. We don't have a massive team at the Lowland League, and that's one of the things, you know, I would like to improve, you know, but you've got to work under the constraints that you're faced with, you know. So we really don't have a massive team in place to do much to expand the Lowland League, and it's definitely something we're looking at, something we're looking to do, you know, and now and in the future, of course.
What sort of thing would you like to do?
Yeah, listen, I mean, I think, you know, what I would love to do, I would love to, for instance, bring a commercial manager on, so to speak, you know, to go out and, you know, source sponsorship deals, look at, you know, commercial opportunities for us. You know, we've talked about within the league, you know, looking at, you know, stuff like your own TV channel in the way of producing highlights packages for the leagues and the clubs, for the league and the clubs, you know, to move forward with and maximise their own commercial opportunities within the game. But it's proved difficult mainly because, you know, the finances within the league, you know, we don't have the finance in place to be able to employ someone. So we're relying on volunteers, you know, mainly from the clubs and the board. But I'm always aware that, you know, individuals within the league, you know, it's a tough challenge running their own clubs at the moment, you know, and getting, you know, commercial deals, etc., and sponsorships for their own clubs. So it's a difficult one for the league to move forward with. You know, we are always looking at ways to take that forward, but it's very, very difficult at the moment. But that would be one of the main ones, I would say. We need that, you know, more of a commercial, almost awareness and a commercial arm to the league to help us move forward.
Just touching on that, George, the league has had a couple of sponsors in the past, but is currently without one. Is that a big priority for you going forward then?
Yeah, absolutely, Chris. I think, you know, that is vital for the league. You know, it's vital, you know, in many ways. You know, it gives the league a bit more coverage, you know, etc. You know, if you have a title sponsor, you know, and it also gives a title sponsor obviously the coverage. So yeah, I think we need to get a sponsor. But I'm also aware that, you know, if you look at the SPFL without a sponsor at the moment, it's not easy. You know, and especially during this pandemic and during, you know, the global crisis we face, you know, sponsorship of, you know, what you would class as recreational activities is pretty sparse at the moment. You know, so it's a real challenge for us to get anything like that at the moment. But, you know, yeah, it's vital that we do get it, you know, because we want to improve the league, we want to run the league, you know, for the benefit of the members. But, you know, you are constrained by what we're faced with in terms of finance.
How closely have you worked in the past with the sponsors that you've had? I think one of the ones is Geosonic that really jumps out at me that I remember and kind of attribute to the league as well. What kind of value are you looking to get for both parties when you sign a new sponsor?
Yeah, listen, I'm always, and I do this at the club level as well, you know, I'm not keen on just taking a sponsor just for the sake of taking their money. Now, you know, that I know that contradicts what I may have said, but there's got to be value in it for both parties. You know, I'm not comfortable with taking a sponsor on and not, you know, having a return for them. You know, I've seen it many times in, you know, in my working life. You know, you take money from a sponsor, you take money from another party, and I'm always thinking, well, what are they getting out of it? And if they're not getting something out of it, it doesn't really sit right with me, you know. And that's something I think it's important. You know, you need to build a relationship with your sponsor. You need to make sure that they're getting something out of it. you know, as well. And I think all too often it happens where, you know, there's commercial deals go in place and, you know, the people who are supplying the finance or supplying the money, you know, are left behind sometimes. So I'm quite keen to have a sponsor where, you know, we can work together and, you know, drive both products forward, not just the Lowland League, because, you know, at the end of the day, if somebody's good enough to give you finance, you know, you've got to help them as well, because they're doing it to improve their business and they're not just doing it as a favour.
In terms of driving the Lowland League forward, I certainly feel like there's been a growing interest in the league over the past few years in particular. Is that something that you've experienced too, that you've kind of realised too? And have you been able to measure that in any way? I know that could be quite a difficult question.
No, I mean, in terms of your first part of your question there, Chris, you know, the league's profile has risen year on year since it started back in 2013. You know, and I think, you know, if you look at, for instance, some of the players that are attracted now to the Lowland League, you know, players are now actually, you know, physically leaving, you know, SPFL teams to come and play in the Lowland League. You know, and as we go forward, that's only going to get better, and that's only going to improve because of the standard of the league. You know, so it's been driven up year on year, and that's down to the clubs. You know, the clubs have made a big investment, you know, and a big effort to improve themselves because they want to get into the SPFL. Well, not, I don't think we're one of those leagues that's, you know, what you would term a, you know, it's full of teams that are blocking the pyramid. We're definitely not. You know, I think every team has got its own ambitions and it sets its own levels. But, you know, in terms of the success of the league, I think it's really on an upward curve. You know, as I say, you know, which is testament to the teams, really, you know, and the players they're able to attract. In terms of measuring its success, it's difficult to say, Chris, to be honest with you. You know, I mean, it depends what, you know, metrics you use to measure. You know, if you're looking at crowds, etc., well, you know, that's a difficult one because there's certain teams in our league who outstrip, you know, SPFL teams in terms of crowds. But, you know, and I'll be the first to admit, one team, we struggle to attract a crowd, partly because, you know, perhaps we play in Alloa, which isn't ideal for us. But, you know, so in terms of, you know, using metrics to measure the success, I think it's a difficult one. But I think all we can say is, you know, the coverage we get in the media now compared to when we first started, you know, is certainly, you know, went through the roof.
For those listening that are unfamiliar with the Lowland League, I suppose just to put it in a quick bit of context, you sit at Tier 5 within Scottish football, which obviously is one below SPFL League 2, same level as Highland League. But in the last couple of years especially, obviously the pyramid below the Lowland League has expanded quite significantly and grown. What does that mean for the league in the long term?
Yeah, Michael, it's a really good question. I mean, for us in the Lowland League, there's now a massive pressure on the league. You know, below us and the tiers below, I think there's something like 120, 130 teams, you know, fighting to get into the Lowland League. And the league, you know, I'll openly admit, is under pressure to increase relegation spots and increase accessibility to league, you know, to obviously ventilate at the bottom to allow more teams in, you know, and that's something we're well aware of and we're something, you know, we recognise. You know, we can't say as a league, you know, to the SPFL, well, you need to open up and you need to be more accessible to us if we're not prepared to look at it at our end as well. You know, there's some really ambitious teams coming through from the East of Scotland, the West of Scotland and the South of Scotland leagues, you know. And that only increased last year with the introduction of the West League. You know, you have some famous old junior names in there, Auchinleck, Pollock, etc., Kilwinning Rangers. And then you've got your established teams in the East, you know, your Linlithgows, Pennycooks, Trenents, etc. So there is a clamour for us to open up, you know, at the bottom of the league. You know, the same arguments we are making with the SPFL, in terms of asking them to open up and increase ventilation, the tier six leagues are making those arguments to us. And do you know something? I agree. They're quite right. They're absolutely right to do so. You know, so we're hoping that the pressure from below us will help us increase the pressure to the SPFL, if that makes sense. Because, you know, we are saying, well, now we have 120 teams below the Lowland League. You know, we can't just stop the pyramid. We can't block it. You know, and it's what I, you know, referred to earlier on. You know, I'm not necessarily saying we don't have teams who are deliberately blocking the pyramid, but maybe we as a league have to recognise that, you know, we have to do something and be proactive. We can't complain about, you know, as I say, ventilation at one end and not do about it something about it at the other end, and it's something where we definitely recognise.
I think football fans across the world have pretty much answered this question over the last few days with the European Super League announcements, but you touched on it there, George, earlier in terms of the increased investment from the clubs in the Lowland League over the past few seasons. But how important is that level of competitiveness to the league product as a whole?
Oh, absolutely, Chris. It's vital. You know, I mean, I think if you have a league that's not competitive or is not seen as competitive, it makes it far less commercially viable. You know, I think, you know, we go back to the sponsor argument. Is a sponsor going to come and say, okay, I'm going to give you X amount of money, for your league, when I know really there's only one or two teams capable of winning it? It's far more attractive if they look at it and say, listen, that's a really competitive league. There's loads of teams in there who I can get coverage from, who will be up there at the end of the season, and make it an attractive proposition for sponsors or commercial partners. I think the competitiveness in the league is vital to the success of the league. You know, it's very, we need that. You need, any league thrives on competitiveness. I think if you look at, you know, some of the other leagues in European football particularly, you know, you can pretty much pick out at the start of the season who's going to win those leagues, you know, or you can narrow it down to one or two teams. I genuinely think, you know, in the Lowland League, you know, being realistic, you know, you could look at the start of every season and say, yeah, listen, there's five or six teams who could easily win that, you know, and that makes it really attractive. It makes it attractive to come and watch because, you know, punters are looking for value for money, you know, and that's what we want to give them. You know, we want to give them value for money. And if you've got a pretty uncompetitive league, they're not going to come and watch you. So we have to try and drive that part of it forward.
One other thing for me in terms of, and it's probably a kind of double-edged question in terms of how often do you meet and communicate with the clubs in the Lowland League, and how much do they give feedback generally on the league? But then the second part of it is, and you were touching on it earlier as well in terms of the mass of clubs that are now below the Lowland League too, how much do you communicate them in terms of communicate with them in terms of trying to open up the bottom of the league?
Yeah, Chris. I mean, we have quarterly meetings with the clubs, you know, and we'll maybe have them more frequently if there's issues to be talked about, you know. So yeah, we have general meetings quarterly with the clubs, and you know, it's an open forum. I like to have an open forum at these meetings, you know. And try and, you know, allow the clubs to ask questions, allow the clubs to inquire about things, you know, and I'm always happy to talk to clubs offline, if you like. You know, I talk to people at certain clubs quite a lot. You know, they'll phone up and ask a question. More than happy to engage with any club because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I'm going to meetings on their behalf. You know, I'm just representing them. There's nothing more to it than that. I'm going to meetings to represent them, you know, and if I feel, you know, that there's stuff that they need to know, you know, I'll tell them. And if they ask the question, I'll tell them what I'm able to tell them, you know. So an open line of communication between, you know, the board level and the clubs is vital, you know. And as I say, the door's always open, to use an old cliche, but, you know, I mean that, and, you know, they can call me anytime, email me, or, you know, Zoom, whatever, you know, whatever they want to do. As I say, we do meet with them on a quarterly basis. Obviously, with the pandemic, we would do it face to face. You know, we'd meet at a central point in Scotland and you know, meet the clubs. But we've been doing the last few obviously over Zoom. So it's you know, we'll still get those channels of communication open. In terms of the leagues being low, it's quite an opportune moment to ask that question. We actually had a meeting with the four leagues last night. And again, we try to have them quarterly, you know, so the Lowland League, the West, the East and the South all meet to discuss various topics that may affect us all, you know, as a whole, or, you know, topics that may affect certain leagues within the pyramid. You know, I think it's important that we keep that line of communication open with the Tier 6 leagues as well, because ultimately those are the leagues that will be supplying clubs to come into the Lowland League, so they need to know what's happening at our end. And likewise, we want to know what's happening at their end. You know, is there anything we can do better? Is there anything we can help them with or assist them with? You know, but I also think, you know, when you go to negotiate stuff, you know, it's better to have, you know, a group. You know, there's more power in a group buying scenario, if you like, than, you know, one entity. And sometimes, you know, we will have meetings with, you know, we do have meetings with the Scottish Football Association, you know, from time to time as a group, you know, to discuss things that are impacting the pyramid and impacting the teams within it. So, yeah, I'd like to think there's an open channel of communication between all parties in the pyramid.
George, how tough has the last year been, obviously from a pandemic point of view, but from a club and a league perspective?
Yeah, Michael, it's been, I mean, it's like we're no different from any other league or any other club. You know, from a club perspective, it's been really challenging because, you know, in terms of the Lowland League, in terms of, you know, clubs within it, I think it's been stop-start. Obviously, you know, for obvious reasons, I understand that. But we started back as a league back in October, you know, and we stopped in January again, you know, because basically, you know, we didn't have the affordability, you know, to test, you know, for the PCR testing. So it's been trying to keep the players together and keeping communication with the players, the management, etc., and keep them almost interested in your club, because I would imagine, well, a lot of clubs in the Lowland League, you only have 1 year deals with players. I know our club, that's what we do. So it's trying to keep the players motivated, trying to keep them interested in the club, you know, because you want to sign them again next year. You know, we were doing well this year at BSC. You know, from a personal point of view, we wanted to sign them. You know, we want to sign them again for next season, but that line of communication was broken, you know, because, you know, we stopped playing. And, you know, it's a natural thing, you know. I think everybody suffered a wee bit from a lack of motivation, you know, and I think that went through Scottish football, you know, and I think it's been difficult from that point of view, you know, to keep the motivation levels up, you know, for everyone involved, talking from management all the way down, you know, it's... And, you know, that's been right through Scottish football. You know, fortunately enough, you know, SPFL clubs were allowed to go back under testing regime. And I think that's helped. I think it's great. It's brilliant for them that they're allowed to do that. And, you know, they were able to do that. But, you know, if you drop below the SPFL tour level, you know, I think clubs, especially clubs who rely on, you know, community engagement, I found it really difficult. You know, it's not been easy. But we're all in the same boat, and, you know, we're obviously grateful. We're still able to talk about it, and we're here, etc. So, you know, and we're looking forward to next season. So, you know, that gives us something to focus on.
Yeah, that focus, I think, has been important for a lot of people, including myself. An interesting question we've been asking some of the guests recently, and interesting to hear your take, George, is, you know, obviously, we've got the Euros, and there's going to be some fans in the Euros, and we all hope that goes well for a number of reasons, and hope that come next season we're starting to get more fans back into the grounds. When we can fully open up, do you see that we'll be getting, like, crowds will get an initial bump initially, or do you think there might be some fans that we've lost along the way?
It's a really good question, Michael, and it's one we've been discussing in-house at BSC because, you know, during the pandemic there, we did a lot of live streaming and our particular stream was free. And, you know, we've been having the debate, do we carry that on next season or do we stop it? Because are people more tempted to stay in the house and just watch a live stream than come along to the game? And, you know, I would like to think that most people would want to come out to a game and experience the match day atmosphere, so to speak. I think people just want to get out of the house. I think, you know, they've had enough of watching football on the telly. And whilst it's great, it's not the same. You want to actually go there and talk to other people, you know, and socialise, have a pie and a bovril, whatever, you know. So I think we will. I think we'll see a wee increase in crowds when we go back, purely because people just, you know, are wanting that bit of normality back in their life. You know, and while watching live streams on the telly is great, it's not normal. You wouldn't normally do that on a Saturday afternoon, I don't think. You know, and that's something that I think, you know, personally, I think we will see, you know, we'll get a bump effect, if you like, you know, when we go back, hopefully, you know, people, and I hope to see new people as well, you know, people who just want to watch football, you know, not necessarily, you know, whatever team they support, you know, but just come out and watch football in general. And I think the lower leagues may really benefit from this, I have to say, you know, especially with all the talk of the European Super League, you know, and people are fed up with the money grabbing, I think, at the higher level of the game, you know, so it might actually drive people towards lower league football. You know, I genuinely think that. So I'm hopeful we'll see a rise in attendances after, you know, after the summer and when we're able to all go back to a wee bit of normal life, you know. But I know we are certainly looking at still doing the streaming next season, but I'll go back to my point. I think people want to get out and about and actually get back to sit on the ground. You know, it's a different experience from watching on the telly.
No, 100%. I'm choking to go to a game as a fan. I've been fortunate enough to be at Scotland games and some Scottish Cup games on a working capacity, but it just doesn't replicate the same as being in the stand and watching it.
I was just going to say, I'm absolutely desperate for an Alloa Pie Hut pie on a roll. When George mentioned a pie there, so that's one of the first places I think I'll be going when fans can get back into the stadiums again.
The most famous dish in Scottish football, Chris.
definitely is.
Yeah, I think people, it's small stuff like that people miss. You know, as you know, yeah, I've seen it talked about on Twitter and I saw it on social media. You know, it's simple things that people are missing, that you can't get sitting in the house watching on your TV. You know, I just think the social aspect is really, you know, underestimated in terms of football. Going out and having a bit of banter with someone, you can't beat it. You can't beat sitting in a football stadium and having a bit of banter. I think it's great.
George, I've actually just talking about sitting in the ground and different things and stuff like that. Where do you stand on, you know, obviously, in Scotland, you're not allowed a beer at football, but you can at the rugby. Where do you sit on that?
Yeah, listen, I think certainly. I mean, Michael, I see it in lower league. I've been to a couple of lower league football games in England. You can have a beer there in the lower leagues, you know. And a friend of mine went to, I think it was round about, I can't remember where it was, but it was a local club he went to, and, you know, he said it was great. It was at Christmas time, and you had a drink, you know, a bit of mulled wine or something as they went in, I think he said it was, and, you know, the atmosphere was great, and, you know, I think there's definitely a place for it. I really do, especially at lower league, you know. It doesn't matter what walk of life you go into, you know, there is always someone who will abuse the situation. It doesn't matter where you go or you know, what ground you go to. However, in general, I think, you know, when the alcohol ban was first put in, you know, 1980, you know, round about then after the Scottish Cup final, you know, and it was probably the right thing to do at the time. But we've moved on a lot, you know. Stadiums are easier controlled, you know. You can identify seats now, and people are actually sitting down. I know a lot of, you know, grounds in our level, you know, are standing still, but I'm not against it. I have to say, I think it maybe adds a wee bit to the atmosphere, you know. Yes, you will get the odd person who will abuse the situation, understand that. But in general, at lower league football, I think it would just add to the day out, to be honest with you. And you'd probably attract more people. Now, I don't know if that's the right message to send out, just to come to the football and get a drink, but I'm not against the idea, I have to say.
I generally agree with you. I think you would get that temptation to go, or do you fancy just going down to your local game with a few of the boys or your friends just to go, and you can get a pint and you can watch the football. And yeah, I think that there's a lot of benefit in it. It still blows my mind that it's 41 years down the line and we're still in this situation. But there you go. What can you say to that? George, if you can allow yourself to dream a little bit, you know, fast forward 10 years, where would you like the league to be? What's your hopes for the league?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, what I would like to see is, you know, certainly, you know, more open, you know, at the top, free-flowing ventilation at, you know, at both ends of the table. I think, you know, that's vital, you know, for any pyramid to work. We need to be able to, you know, be able to do that, you know, and free movement of clubs between the SPFL and the lower leagues. You know, I think... And I was going to touch on this later on, but I think there's a case certainly that we should look at maybe integrating football into the one body, if you like. Maybe not, you know. I see actually, you know, liking the Lowland League 2 is on the same level as the SPFL, I'll be honest. You know, so you would look at things. Why would the SPFL ever look at just taking over Tier 5, for instance, or, you know, would they look at a one sort of super body to run all of the leagues? I don't know. I think there's possibilities there down the line, you know. But I think, you know, the main thing for me is, you know, there's got to be a free flow of clubs between all leagues in the pyramid at different levels, you know. So I would like to think, you know, that will happen sooner rather than later. But it's certainly something I think, you know, it needs to happen, you know, for the longevity of the game more than anything else.
That's definitely the dream. In terms of the short term, George, what's next for the league and for you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, we need, you know, we are obviously in the midst of trying to get playoffs done this season, etc., you know, so that's taken up a fair bit of time, which, you know, we're still working on that. But again, I know I'm going to repeat myself here, but, you know, the short term is we need to get the pyramid working properly, I think, you know, in terms of the free flow of clubs, you know. And I get fed up listening to myself saying it, but it's true. It's, you know, for any pyramid to work, it's got to function, you know, the way we want it, you know, in terms of the movement of clubs. You know, so in the short term, you know, and that's one of the things. But the other thing is, you know, obviously we need to get through this pandemic, and that's the bottom line, you know, and get a sponsor to help with the finances of the league, because it's a struggle, you know. There's no doubt about it. You know, there's no doubt there with a magic wand who's going to help us, you know, in terms of that. So we need to get through this period of, you know, instability within football, and help our clubs within the league. You know, that's one of the aims. You know, we want to make sure we all come out of it at the other end and we don't lose anyone along the way. So in terms of that side of things, yeah, you know, get a sponsor on board, get a bit of, you know, stability into the league, and, you know, we can then sort of look to branch out from there.
You've mentioned them a few times, George, and we obviously touched on it at the start of the show, but from a BSC Glasgow perspective as well, we, as Michael said, we had Michael Park on the podcast. I double checked, and it was way back in 2018. Would you believe, Michael? Feels like yesterday still. But we touched on the work that makes BSC Glasgow stand out in that podcast. One of the questions off the back of that for you, George, is how important is marrying that off-the-pitch approach with results on the pitch, for example, like the Scottish Cup run last season?
Yeah, it's vital. You know, I think, you know, success, it's great having success off the park, and there's many, many clubs who run successful social medias, social, you know, interactions with their fans, etc., and have great setups. However, I think if you want to take the club forward and you want the club to be noticed, you know, you have to be successful in the park. You know, we want to move the club. We've got big ambitions for the club. We want to see them in the SPFL. We want to move them up, you know, and help along that road. So whilst, you know, the off the park stuff is great, you know, it's fantastic. I can't speak highly enough of the work that Michael does. I think, you know, on the park, you know, helps him to do that. If that sounds, you know, if that doesn't sound too bad, but you know, the results on the park makes his job a wee bit easier in terms of being able to market the team, being able to put, you know, social interactions. So I think, you know, they both go hand in hand. You know, I think one helps the other. You know, it's a symbiotic relationship. If you like, you know, it's they feed off each other.
And you mentioned again earlier on about streaming on Twitch this season and it being free. And obviously Derek, who's Mozza Plays, is heavily involved in the club from an ambassadorial perspective as well. What benefits have the club seen from being active on that platform?
Oh, it's been fantastic. I mean, that was a great innovation. I remember when Michael first approached Derek about that, you know, and we looked into it, you know, and obviously the pandemic gave us an opportunity to do this, you know. But I think, you know, the innovation of it, you know, I think we were one of the first clubs to use Twitch, and Derek's channel has a number of followers anyway, so you know, piggybacking on his success as well, you know. But again, it's one of those relationships. Again, it's helped both of us, you know. I think it's been really good with the innovation side of things, and the fact that we do it for free as well, I think it's great. There's, you know, a lot of clubs out there do free stream, but a lot, you know, it's just pay-per-view, which is fine. People have got to survive and clubs have got to survive. I absolutely get that, you know. But I really don't know why more clubs don't look at the Twitch platform, to be honest with you. Everybody's got their own, you know, needs and own objectives, of course, you know, but I think, you know, we've certainly seen a lot of positive coverage about the club and we got a lot of good publicity because we were using Twitch, and you know, the amount of people that's interacted on a match day has risen week on week. You know, I mean, Derek's obviously able to see that, and he can see the amount of interactions. But it's brought a new community, and you know when Derek's involved in the Football Manager scene, has been great. You know, and the interactions we've had from that has been fantastic. So. Yeah, listen, I can't speak highly enough of the two, you know, Michael and Derek, for doing this. You know, it's been fantastic, and I think you know, more clubs should maybe look at that platform for taking it forward.
Yeah, I found it very interesting, George, in terms of how you've taken, obviously BSC, as you said, the club is not that old on the grand scale of things, and look to piggyback on Derek's audience to help raise awareness of BSC, which I think is great. And I suppose my question for you off the back of this is, and I'm sure apart from getting asked on playoff matches and whatever else, the most common question you probably get asked is, are you any further closer to getting BSC Glasgow moved back to Glasgow?
The short answer is probably not, Michael. we constantly strive to get back to Glasgow. We constantly strive for land in Glasgow or a ground in Glasgow. It's so difficult, I have to say. You know, it's one of the most common questions I'm asked, and you know, one day I will be able to turn around and say, yeah, listen, we've solved the problem. I think it's becoming more difficult for us to get back to Glasgow at this moment in time because facilities are closing. You know, I mean, Glasgow Life, for instance, yesterday announced that, you know, 90 facilities were staying closed after, you know, they reopened some other ones. And, you know, one of the facilities I noticed was Peterhouse Stadium, they're not reopening that. You know, it's an absolute travesty. Really, I mean, a stadium like that, you know, I know Glasgow, I think it was Glasgow City had to move to Cumbernauld, I think, to play their games. You know, for facilities to be lying empty in Glasgow is awful, you know, and that's not helping our cause. You know, so we're prepared to put money into it, and we're prepared to build somewhere, but you know, it's the cost of land as well. You know, it's we've been close so many times, and you know, we just priced out the market, Michael. We don't have, you know, endless pots of gold to do something. So it's really, really frustrating. And it brings me, I mean, listen, I had this debate with someone the other day. I genuinely think, and I'm not just saying this and it will sound that way, but I think ground sharing may be the way to go in Scottish football. You know, the economics and the certainly the finances in the game don't allow, you know, for new build stadiums now, unless, you know, you win the lottery or you come into a huge sum of money. But I think economics dictate going forward. I think you might see more and more clubs sharing with other clubs, you know, share the burden of running a stadium, you know. And I just think it would allow clubs to survive a wee bit longer, you know. But in saying that, I'll contradict myself. You know, we would still love to have our own place, but we're now in a position I'm looking at it going, you know, the costs involved are astronomical. You know, notwithstanding the fact that you can't get land anyway, you know, for a reasonable price near Glasgow. You know, and again, there's facilities closing left, right and centre, you know, and it's becoming more and more difficult, Michael, I have to say. You know, so I would love to say, yeah, we're really close and we'll be moving, but, you know, at this moment in time, there's nothing firm on the horizon.
Yeah, I can only imagine your struggle, and it's, yeah, ground sharing makes sense in a lot of matters. We see it across Scottish football to a certain extent, but yeah, I think something's going to have to give at some point. George, just to finish, conscious of your time and being very appreciative of what you've been saying and having you on so far, and I think you've already mentioned about a single governing body, but if I was to put the power in your hands to change one thing about Scottish football, what would it be?
Yeah, I think definitely, Michael, I think we need to streamline the game, you know, and I'm definitely not trying to put anyone out of a job. But if you look at the size of country we are and the population, you know, we have several bodies involved in Scottish football, you know, from different FAs, different, you know, regulators, etc., and, you know, governing bodies, and I just think we really need to streamline it. And it goes back to a commercial thing for me as well. You know, if we're all going, you know, as a group, you know, you do the group buying thing almost, you know, in terms of sponsorship, in terms of commercial deals, surely we can get a better deal as a one rather than several different bodies looking for different deals. You know, I think, you know, that's something I would love to look at and love to do, is look at, you know, almost doing a buying group almost, you know, in terms of doing a deal for the greater good of the whole game rather than certain parts of it, if that doesn't sound too bad. But, you know, I genuinely think, you know, given the size of the country we are and given the you know, the state of the game, etc., I just feel as though we need to do something to make sure the game has a longevity, so to speak.
Yeah, I'm all for working together, coming together and basically trying to improve Scottish football together as opposed to all doing it separately. I think that's a great place to end the podcast, George. Thank you so much for taking your time, as Michael said, to come and chat to us today. It's very much appreciated.
No, you're welcome. More than welcome. Thanks for having me on.
That wasn't a bad way to end on, was it, George Fraser?
No, good podcast, definitely, and a good thing to end it on as well. Basically something that we've been doing the whole time and trying to help all levels of the pyramid in Scotland, haven't we?
Definitely. And yeah, as we said at the start, this was the last Scottish Football Marketing podcast, so cue sad music. But yeah, one of the reasons that we're finishing up is that I'm actually leaving the Scottish FA. So it's been a bit of a hard decision to leave football, but we thought it was best to end on 60 episodes, didn't we?
Yeah, I think when you look back at, like, I think we mentioned in that podcast there with George, like, thinking back to when we were chatting to Michael Park, like, 2018 just feels like a lifetime ago. But yeah, I'm not going to blow smoke up your arse too much, Michael, but yeah, it's been great to follow what you've been doing at the Scottish FA over the years. And obviously it's been an absolute pleasure to podcast with you.
I'm not just saying this because the fact that we've done it for so long, but this podcast has actually helped my day job quite significantly over the years, and it's been educational for me. I think I listened back to one or two of the first ones, and I think I've improved in how I host these things. And I know you're a dab hand at podcasting now, and we'll get on to a little bit of that. But I suppose for me at this stage, I just want to thank all the guests that have been on, all 60. Thank you to the likes of Danny Bisland, who did the series on the power of football. Thank you to everybody that engaged on Twitter. We've always been so appreciative of people saying that they enjoyed listening and the interactions on Twitter. And, you know, we set out and we always knew that this was going to be a sort of very niche podcast, but to have been able to grow an audience weirdly beyond our shores. And I was looking at the analytics before we jumped on here, Chris, and we've had listeners, and we know we've had listeners because we've interacted with the guys in the US and some in Ireland, but even further afield, such as Canada, you know, India, Spain. So I think thank you very much for listening, and thank you to everybody else, obviously, that has listened and tried to be a part of the show.
Yeah, and I think that's the bigger thing for me as well, has been everybody that does get in touch with us. And I think over the past few years, we can definitely point to some things that clubs have done that maybe have stemmed from them listening to the podcast. And for me, that's an amazing thing that we've done.
Yeah, I think we've always set out to, we didn't want to be patronising, we didn't want to be telling people that they're doing things wrong, but we always just wanted to give little bits of advice, inspiration, that we're not expecting volunteers, especially down the pyramid, to be rolling out full marketing strategies. But as you say, Chris, to see some things that we've perhaps discussed on the podcast being rolled out, whether it's coincidentally or the fact that they've taken it from a bit of inspiration from the podcast, it has been great and encouraging. And I suppose a good juncture then is to ask you what shows have been your favourite to do. Obviously, I wouldn't lie and say that there's been any that I haven't enjoyed, because there's not. You know, I've enjoyed every single one. They've all been varying, different topics, some more niche than others, but I've never come away from one going, you know, that was a bit crap, wasn't it?
No, I think that's been the big thing for us as well, in terms of none of them have been terrible. And I think that you can probably point to every single episode that we've done and somebody could take something away from it. And I think that's been so great from our perspective, and it's been so great from everybody listening as well. In terms of favourites, I think, yeah, we've both got a couple that we're going to pick out and probably have a little bit of a chat with. I'm going to go first, Michael.
Yeah, and just for the record, me and Chris haven't discussed.
No, we haven't
before,
yet.
So this is, I'll be Chris's list surprise to me, and vice versa.
Are we going to go five each?
Yeah, go five each. Let's do
it. Okay, cool. Mine aren't in any particular order either, to be honest. So obviously, I love them all equally, all 60 of them. But I'm going to signal out Bohemian FC Dan Lambert. And I'm going to guess that that's on your list as well.
Yeah, I actually did rank mine. Not that I've got favourites, the five that I got the most from. And yeah, I had Daniel at number two.
I think, like, for me, one of the biggest things from that is that I came away from that thinking I want my football club to be very, very similar, if not almost a complete replica of that. And I think that's one of the most impressive things that club has done, and what Dan has done in his time there. And obviously, I'm not, was he had he just become CEO, or was that after the podcast we did that, Mike? I think it was after, wasn't it?
It was after the podcast, yeah. It wasn't long after the podcast, but he wasn't chief exec at the time.
Yeah, and obviously the podcast helped in his application to become CEO of the club. But I think I took away from that, and I think one of the things that I did take away from that was keeping in touch with Dan, and I actually got him to come and speak to us as part of the Morton Club Together volunteer team. And he came and presented to us and kind of basically told us all about Bohemian in a similar way that he did in the podcast. And I think that we, so many of the volunteers loved that podcast, loved what Dan said to us when he came to chat to us. And I think hopefully you will see a few aspects of the club when Morton go fan-owned.
Yeah, there was so much in that, and just a different way of working in terms of, you know, they're clear on what their values are and what their principles are, and they stick to them, and they're the rewards. And I think it was the best example we've had on the podcast of, you know, success on the park, while it helps, doesn't dictate how successful you can be off the park. And I think Bohemian were a prime example of that.
Definitely. You want to give us another one?
Yeah, my favourite one was Mark Bradley's fan experience. Mm-hmm. I think it was only like episode 5 that we did, but Mark's so passionate about, you know, the improving fan experience and the fan engagement across football, and he's a big advocate of Scottish football if you're lucky enough to follow him on Twitter. And for me, I just came away from that podcast doing it, and I remember we did it because it was one of our, I think it was our first remote one that we did, if only we knew now. And, you know, I came away from it just buzzing, just going, you know, he had so many examples in it, and I just thought, you know, this is what it's all about, and there's so much that clubs in Scotland could lift and lay, and again, I appreciate we obviously had the opportunity to flip things around and go on Mark's podcast as well, the Fan Experience podcast, and that was great to be on that as well. But yeah, it was the one, I think, because it was one of the early ones as well, and I thought, you know what, we are doing the right thing here and getting these sort of guests on.
That one got so much reaction as well, didn't it, really early on? And I think that's when people started to take notice of the fact that they could take something away from the podcast and take something into what they're attempting to do at either a club at the top level or a club at the lower level of Scottish football, and not just Scottish football as well, as Mark has so many examples of, like, across European and world football as well, that he just seems to have as like an encyclopedia in his head. I don't want to have our top fives exactly the same, but Mark was definitely up there for me, I think, just because I'd followed him for so long as well, and it was great to kind of finally chat to him, and I'm sure it won't be the last time that you hear from Mark from a Scottish football perspective.
No, hopefully not. Okay, back to you then. Tell me who's also on your list.
I'm going to go for, again, like I said, mine aren't in any order, but I really enjoyed the kind of lower non-league roundtable that we had. So we had Sean Davenport on from Queen's Park, who have obviously gone on to have an incredible season this season as well, and just gained promotion as we're recording this. We had Roy Campbell on, who was at Cali Braves at the time, and David Brockett from Clydebank, who obviously is somebody that, if you are involved in marketing in Scottish football, you probably should follow David on Twitter, because Clydebank have just been consistently punching above their weight over the past few years, and obviously it would be great to finally see them kind of climb the ladder a little bit. And I think they've just recently, did they get a club license, Michael? Is that?
I'm not 100% sure if it's official yet, but I think they're pretty much.
I think they've definitely gone for it, haven't they? Because I saw Clydebank tweeting about it and David sharing it. So I really enjoyed that one, because I think it really just hit home. Like, there's clubs at those levels, and they were all three different levels across the pyramid, and every one of them are trying to do some good things off the pitch, and we just wanted to get them all together and have a bit of a discussion about what they're doing on social, how much content they're creating, how they're creating that, and I think, yeah, hopefully some people took some things away from that one as well.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed that one, and probably we didn't do the three guys justice, because I think we could have done one individually on each of them, but it was a different idea that we tried in terms of that whole round table approach. And yeah, I thought it was another great one in terms of, you know, clubs at that level. And we've always said, and we've said it already on this podcast, that the podcast was created to help people at all levels of the game. And yeah, that one was another good example of that.
Definitely. Take us back to you.
I'll continue on the sort of lower league, non-league theme. And I very enjoyed our discussion with Nathan from Berwick Rangers. I just thought, you know, for a club that had been through the mill and by their own admission, you know, had to hit the reset button, a hard reset button on what they were doing off the pitch. And Nathan was new-ish at the time to Berwick, but came on and spoke very well about what they had been working on and what they've been trying. And it's one club that I have been constantly keeping an eye out for now in terms of what they do. And yeah, again, still planning my away day down there when I get a chance.
Yeah, it was a really impressive kind of how they hit almost like a hard reset, wasn't it, on the club, and like then taking it to that next level of actually producing some really impressive things. I think even their kind of commercial brochure and some of the ideas in that as well, that's still an example that I look at pretty regularly, to be honest, just in terms of things that I'm doing here and there. So yeah, I think that was a really good one as well.
Well, what about you, Ed? I've got a couple each, I guess, still.
Yeah, I think so. I've gone for Josh Mason inside Indy 11, just because I think it was something a little bit different from what we'd done so far. We hadn't really heard from anybody too far, like further afield. And Josh obviously got in touch with us and was a really keen listener to the podcast as well. And when we found out that he was kind of part of Indy 11, and they have a Scottish manager and Martin Rennie as well, who I then interviewed for Pure Football as well, just to get another wee plug in there. But I think Josh just impressed me massively, and I think that when it came to it, like, I think sometimes those different voices can sometimes make a big difference as well, and kind of hit home some of the things that hadn't really been either thought about or discussed in Scottish football.
Yeah, I did enjoy the ones that were maybe a bit more left field. And Josh, again, I also had some communication with Joshua after as well, just on a few things. And great guy, great stuff going on the club. I still follow them on Twitter, funny enough. And well, I've actually got a very similar one in terms of it. I didn't have Indy 11 in my top five, but it was very close to it. I've got Ollie Scheuer from, he was at the AFL at the time, and he came on and talked about things more from a strategic point of view. And I just find the whole chat fascinating. It's one I've actually went back and listened to separately just to pick up on things I missed at the time. And again, it was talking at taking that inspiration from elsewhere, and we've done a few in the end, and that's what I kind of loved about the podcast, in that we started dipping into different areas with Kevin Quillen on, who was formerly at the RNA and talked about the Open. We had Alan Granger on about talking about Football Manager. We had Farhan on from Twitch, for example. And you know, that ability to just learn from other things and learn from people who just live and breathe it. And yeah, I thought Ollie spoke really well, and was a fascinating podcast.
Yeah, mine was a bit of a toss-up between Josh and Ollie's ones there, because yeah, I kind of count them as quite similar ones, just from that, like the different voices coming in to kind of teach us something that we maybe don't already know.
I'm going to guess we've probably got a similar last one in here.
Ooh, right. Well, I don't know. I'm going to go for mine.
Go.
It's Alan Burrows.
Yeah, I've got Alan Burrows. I've got a joint with Grant Russell, to be fair, in just terms of a general, the Motherwell team coming on and supporting us in terms of Alan Burrows, our first chief exec, I think we had on, wasn't
it? Yeah, I think you're right.
And then obviously we delved a bit further on some of the stuff that that Alan talked about with Grant. So yeah, I've got the same ish.
I think the reason I chose Alan in particular was, again, probably coming back to, we actually, I text Alan back and forward and managed to get him to come and speak to the MCT volunteers as well. And I think that it's just taking those learnings and hopefully making sure that your club or whatever you're involved in, to be honest, can benefit from that and hear it firsthand as well. And I think similarly to what happened when we had Dan come to speak to us, Alan's chat with us in the volunteering team for MCT went down superbly. And again, if you're a club and you're not trying to be like Motherwell at the moment, I think you're almost like, what, I have to ask you, what are you up to? Because I think it was very difficult for us not to talk about them on a weekly basis when we were talking about examples back in the day, Michael, as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think Motherwell, Kenny, when he was at Hibs, there was a few names that kept getting mentioned for a while, Aberdeen and some of the stuff they were doing with their membership, for example, as well. So, yeah, I echo what you were saying in terms of, it was just a fascinating chat to hear about the principles. And again, it's similarities to the Bohemian podcast in terms of, you've got your club values, you've got clear in your mind what you're trying to do, and you just stick to it. And it's you work that. And then, as I said, Grant came on and expanded that on the whole aspect of player marketing, for example, which I know Grant and we've talked about on the podcast before, has gone on to expand on that even further with various articles and interviews. So yeah, the two Motherwell ones for me were on my list joint. So yeah, similar list but different at the same time. And I think just one that I enjoyed, which wasn't a guest and it wasn't technically our podcast, but I still look back fondly on being asked by Gavin at Pure Football to do the Club X.
Yeah, obviously we kind of nicked that one for our feed, didn't we, and stuck it out through us as well. But I loved that one too, obviously kind of marrying that aspect up and kind of putting the onus on you and I, Michael, a little bit from flipping it round to us asking the questions sometimes to us having to provide the answers. I think from that perspective too, thinking about that, like, I really enjoyed when I just chatted to you about behind the scenes of Scotland qualifying. Too, obviously, to kind of mark that occasion with a podcast from our perspective. Obviously, it was an amazing feat to do it on the pitch, and everybody's looking forward to the Euros. But from, if we're taking a step back and thinking about it from a marketing, content and digital perspective, then I think it was a no-brainer for us to get that podcast in there as well.
No, and it's easy to talk about when things have gone well, and hopefully, you know, been working hard on plans before I finish up for Euro 2020, and the team have got some great stuff that they'll be doing over the tournament. So hopefully down the line somebody from the Scottish FA can come on and or be able to talk about it in some way. And I suppose that leads us on nicely, Chris, to, obviously, I'm stepping back from the Scottish FA, and this is the last Scottish FA Scottish Football Marketing podcast, but you're not going to give up on the podcasting just yet, are you?
No, I don't think it would have been right to stop doing it, but just because I've enjoyed it so much. Listeners seem to have enjoyed it so much, so I think it's probably a good idea to try and continue it in some way. I'm not saying it'll be exactly the same, and maybe it won't be as good, Michael, because you won't be involved. But yeah, the Sports Marketing Scotland podcast. I should get the title right before I start recording them, but. Yeah, I'll be launching the Sports Marketing Scotland podcast. Very, very similar in idea to what we've been doing. But, I mean, we've not been restricted or limited in any way with who we wanted to talk to, Michael. But I just think it will. I'm going to try and get so many more names on from kind of across sport in Scotland as well. I think we've touched on aspects of that. Obviously, you brought up when we chatted to Kevin about golf, but I speak to Connor quite a lot, who's at the RNA at the moment, so hoping to get him on, for example. He already knows that, it's not a surprise to him if he is listening, which is good. But yeah, few names like that, just across sport, and touch on obviously things like netball in Scotland. I think you've got the Strathclyde Sirens, who are really interesting and doing some great stuff off the court. Basketball, I think we've spoken to Robert McKenzie at Glasgow Tigers quite a lot on kind of the speedway stuff. So just kind of that aspect and opening it up a little bit more and seeing what we can get out of it. Very, very similar though.
When are you hoping to kick off?
Well, hopefully just as relatively soon after we finish up this one. So I didn't want to step on any toes and launch them while this one ends.
And talk about breakaways at this
moment. Yeah, the European Super League of a podcast. But yeah, I'll launch it very soon. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Great stuff.
Is that the end for us then?
I think it is.
Just emotional.
Yeah, just thanks to everybody again that has been on or listened, and just it's been great. Obviously, I'm stepping out of football in my next career move, but hopefully I'll be able to be in it and help out where I can, and I suppose never be shy and still reaching out for any advice or help. If you ever want anything, I'm more than happy to help clubs or individuals with anything Scottish football related.
Nice one. And Michael, maybe you'll finally join Sports Marketing Scotland, seeing as everybody just thought it was my podcast for the whole time.
Yeah,
we've been doing it as well.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for your contract offer to join Sports Marketing Scotland, but yeah, you never know.
Cool. And from my perspective as well, obviously a big thank you to everybody that has come on, and a big thank you to you and the Scottish FA, Michael, as well, because I think this just hits home about kind of getting fans involved. I'm a Scottish football fan. I've never worked in sport. I just look at it from the outside looking in, and I've been so appreciative of the opportunity to get basically as much help out there to others as possible by speaking to other people. And yeah, hopefully everybody that has listened has massively enjoyed it, and yeah, sticks with it.
Yeah, the podcast will remain on the Scottish FA website, which you'll find under the club development section or the football development section, if that makes sense. So yeah, they won't be going anywhere, and hopefully people can pick these back up at some point if they're looking for inspiration. But yeah, no, thank you to you as well, Chris. It was a crazy idea that we came up with over Twitter DMs back in the day, and so glad we did it.
Definitely. Thank you very much, Michael.